This message is provided by Bridgeway Community Church. Thanks for tuning in.
Good morning, Bridgeway. It is great to be here. Great to be back together with you. I've missed you over the past couple of weeks. And before I jump into the message this morning, I got to give just a sincere thank you and appreciation to both Pastor Justin and Pastor Mike. They filled in for me over the last couple of weeks, and they become just not only colleagues, but great friends, and I'm very, very grateful for their service and great message. Justin sang for you last weekend. Like, you're not getting that from me. Like, you're just not. So could you put your hands together and thank Mike and Justin for all the ways in which they serve our church? So blessed by those guys. Happy New Year to you. Great to be here with you. Great to have you joining us online as well. I missed you over the last couple weeks because I got COVID, and I'm doing great now, but I'll tell you, there was a stretch there where it did not feel very good, and it kind of fits with the series I wanted to start today, Peaks and Valleys. We're talking about the highs and lows, the ups and downs, the inevitable moments in life that we all have to navigate. And I found myself in a stretch of dealing with a bit of a valley over the past few weeks. In fact, not just the COVID, but kind of from New Year's on, I had one of those stretches where it just seems like nothing could go right. In fact, New Year's was great. Christmas was great. My kids were home. Those that were serving in the military, my daughter, Aislinn in the Air Force, she was home. My son, Brennan, from the Coast Guard, he was home. And so all seven of us all boxed in our little 1,500 square foot home, and it was great. Like, that was a peak. But it seemed like everything went wrong. In fact, I had three cars that had to go in the shop over that short period of time. My garage door broke. That was lovely. And then the worst of it was we're trying to make all these meals, seven of us in our home, and the pump goes out on our house. We have no water in our house. We can't do the dishes. We can't take showers. It was just like one thing after the other. And that's kind of how life works, doesn't it? It seems like the peaks are so rare and the valleys are just so common. You just kind of find yourself going through these moments, and I get it. Everyone's dealing with something, and a lot of people have it way worse than I'll ever have it. But it just seems like you have to learn how to navigate these things. And I'll tell you, that's really what I want to talk about. In fact, I had intended for this series to really be addressing some of the issues that I see in our culture today, just some of the low points that I see people go through with worry and anxiety and stress and depression. And I want to talk about all those things. So come back, and if that's not something you struggle with, maybe you know someone that needs to come and be a part of these conversations over the next several weeks as we talk about this. But today, I really want to talk about the peaks of life, because the peaks seem so rare, don't they? I mean, it seems like when you have a great moment, it seems to just fly right by, and you hardly even maybe take time to recognize the really good moments or to celebrate the really good moments. And we should celebrate the peaks in life. I saw something, and you might have seen this too. It kind of went viral, and the reaction of this video is just so stunning. I love this reaction. In fact, it was a Rockford High School kid that hit kind of a winning shot a few weeks ago. In fact, it's really short. I'll just show it to you. Check this out and watch the reaction from the crowd.
Michigan High School Hoops, South Christian, Rockford tied at 51. Andrew Landis, no. Half court, come on. You're not number two if that doesn't go in. Apparently the fans knew it. They were ready to go. Got the steal, the heave. Come on out on the court. We're a winner. Landis with a Rockford win.
I just love that. I mean, I could watch that all day long. I mean, Rockford on ESPN, top 10 countdown. I mean, I just love that. I love the crowd's reaction. They just start storming the court, right? They can't even hold it back. That heroic shot, you know, kind of the against all odds. I mean, the timer is going out, and he sinks this shot. And just the crowd goes nuts. It seems like those moments are so rare. And I know you could watch a moment like that, and some of you could be a little skeptical and say, the kid got lucky, right? I don't know. He probably practices that shot. You know, he had some skill involved, but he made it. What I love about that moment is I love how this young man stepped into a moment that was so much bigger than himself, and he makes something happen. You know, really, when you look at life, he had no guarantee that shot was going to go in, and I think that really defines a lot of our lives, because we all deal with things in lives where we take the shot and we want the basket to go in, right? And we want the victory, we want the mountaintop, the peak experience in life, and And yet it just seems so uncertain, doesn't it? In fact, I've learned in my life that you really can't manufacture those peaks in life. In fact, I think the best thing you can do is you can learn to live in and maybe even begin to navigate some of the uncertainty in life. And that's really what I want to talk to you about today is how do I deal with uncertainty in life? You know, I have so many conversations and it just seems like every day, every week, it just seems like there's a new issue in our culture, in kind of our world. And I hear so much uncertainty. I mean, I hear people say things like, well, I don't know. You know, I'm not really that sure. You know, take the whole topic of COVID, and it just seems like, you know, everybody's got an opinion, but nobody really, really knows anything. In fact, I was saying to my wife, we had this little argument. Sean and I argue from time to time, and I had said to her, I said, man, we're starting year three of COVID in our world. And she said, no, we're not. And she kind of got like adamant with me, and she says, no, we're not. We're not even finishing year two yet. And I said, no, we're on the eve of starting year three with COVID. And you can kind of see there was an optimist and pessimist view of that. And I just kind of stopped arguing with her. I said, well, fine, whatever. We're ending year two of COVID. But the reality is we really don't know a whole lot more than when this thing started. And I hear that in so many areas of life. And I really feel that the way in which you deal with uncertainty will define your spiritual life, will shape the way you connect with God in the highs, in the lows in life. How do we deal with uncertainty? Maybe just take a little inventory in your own life right now. Is any uncertainty creeping into your life? You dealing with any uncertainty, maybe parenting your kids, maybe parenting young kids, or maybe you got teenager or adult kids, and you're a little uncertain as to how things are going to go for them. Maybe you got a little uncertainty in your career, your job. Maybe you got a little uncertainty in your marriage, in some of your key relationships, maybe a really good friend, maybe somebody that's always been right beside you, and now it just seems like they've kind of turned on you, and it seems like that friendship now is so uncertain. You got any uncertainty in your finances right now? Or maybe I can just check back in a couple of weeks when your visa bill arrives, right? Like, you know, some uncertainty with how maybe you're going to deal with that. And so what I wanted to do today as we navigate the peaks and valleys and discuss this idea of uncertainty is I wanted to take a look at a story in the Bible that I think is so overlooked. It's one of my favorite stories, and it's a moment of great intrigue and a lot of crisis, and I think it teaches us a lot about how to deal with uncertainty. If you have your Bible, I'd love for you to turn to 1 Samuel chapter 14. It's an epic story. It's the kind of story that, honestly, they should make a movie about, because in this story, you're going to meet Jonathan, and you're going to see how Jonathan deals with uncertainty. Let me tell you a little bit about Jonathan. Jonathan is a prince. And that just simply means that Jonathan's dad is a king, King Saul. And there's going to be lots of names and references in what we're going to read, but I want you to really track these two men, King Saul and his son, the prince Jonathan. And they really become kind of a contrast, a study in contrast of how to deal with uncertainty, of really, really big moments in life. You're kind of getting dropped into a place and time where King Saul and his son Jonathan are leading the Israelites, the Hebrew people, and they find themselves up against really, really difficult enemies, the Philistines. And the Bible has a strange way. God has a strange way of dealing with evil in the Old Testament, that God wants to purge the land of evil, of anything opposed to him. And it's really barbaric when you read through the Old Testament. But the Philistines would have been sort of the most opposed to God. They wouldn't have believed in one single God. They would have been into idolatry. They would have been basically against everything that God stood for. In fact, they didn't value life and humanity. In fact, they would embrace really treacherous sort of things, like they would sacrifice their children to their gods. And God uses the Israelites, his people, to purge the land of these evil people. But the Philistines were mighty warriors. In fact, they were giants of people. They were upwards of 8-9 feet tall. In fact, you've heard the story of David and Goliath. Well, Goliath, the giant, was a Philistine. And, oh, by the way, the Israelites at this time don't have any weapons. See, the Philistines were really, really conniving. They sent their assassins into all the villages, and they secretly killed off all of the blacksmiths. And so can you imagine that? You're a nation, you're a group of people, and you have no weapons. And you're going up against battle the giants of the land, the Philistines. Well, there's actually there's two swords in your camp. King Saul has a sword, and his son Jonathan has a sword. And that's where we really begin to study this level of uncertainty. I want to read through the story and then make some observations about how you and I can deal with uncertainty in 2022. 1 Samuel chapter 14, starting in verse 1. It says, "One day Jonathan, son of Saul, said to his young armor bearer, 'Come, let's go to the Philistine outpost on the other side.' But he did not tell his father. Saul was staying on the outskirts of Gibeah under a pomegranate tree in Migron. With him were 600 men, among whom was Ahijah, who was wearing an ephod. He was the son of Ichabod's brother, Ahitub, son of Phinehas, the son of Eli, the Lord's priest in Shiloh. No one was aware that Jonathan had left. On each side of the pass that Jonathan intended to cross to reach the Philistine outpost was a cliff. One was called Bozez and the other Sena. One cliff stood to the north toward Michmash and the other south toward Geba. Jonathan said to his young armor bearer, 'Come, let's go over to the outpost of those uncircumcised men. Perhaps the Lord will act on our behalf. Nothing can hinder the Lord from saving, whether by many or by few.' 'Do all that you have in mind,' his armor bearer said. 'Go ahead, I am with you heart and soul.' Jonathan said, 'Come on then, we will cross over toward them and let them see us. If they say to us, wait there until we come to you, we will stay where we are and not go up to them. But if they say, come up to us, we will climb up because that will be our sign that the Lord has given them into our hands.' So both of them showed themselves to the Philistine outpost. 'Look,' said the Philistines, 'the Hebrews are crawling out of their holes they were hiding in.' The men of the outpost shouted to Jonathan and his armor bearer, 'Come up to us and we'll teach you a lesson.' So Jonathan said to his armor bearer, 'Climb up after me. The Lord has given them into the hand of Israel.' Jonathan climbed up using his hands and his feet with his armor bearer right behind him. The Philistines fell before Jonathan and his armor bearer followed and killed behind him. In that first attack, Jonathan and his armor bearer killed some 20 men in an area about half an acre." We're talking about uncertainty this morning. And as I was reading this in preparation for this message, I thought, I mean, what about this story isn't uncertain? I mean, everything is uncertain. In fact, there's tension, there's stress, there's this idea of like how this is going to go. And you can kind of see that played off right in the beginning. In fact, it's really interesting when you look at the king, Saul, and Jonathan. In fact, have you ever heard of this idea of a stress response? Let me ask it another way. Do you know what your stress response is? Basically, do you know how you respond to real stressful situations? I'll give you a few examples, and then maybe you can kind of find yourself in these responses. One response to stress is you just talk a lot. You know anyone like that? They get real stressful and they just can't stop talking. Talk, 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 talk. They think if they talk enough, they'll somehow find their way through a stressful moment. That might be you. Another stress response is someone gets real stressful and they just say, I will do anything but deal with that stress. They'll just kind of put up avoidance. They'll do anything but deal with the problem. They'll get busy in all sorts of other areas. Maybe that's your stress response. Some people, when they're stressed, they'd only just not avoid, but they go to sleep. And you might know of someone who gets that way. They get stressed out and they can't get out of bed. And they'll sleep. They can't get out of bed in the morning. They can't get out of bed in the afternoon. They can't get out of bed at all, ever. And that's how they deal with stress. And there's kind of one other way to deal with stress. And this is maybe the favorite of most, is they get stressful and their stress response is they order a pizza. And then they have like a dozen donuts. And then they order more pizza. They just can't stop eating. Their stress response is to eat. In fact, I think that's mine. I was at a wrestling tournament watching my boys, and it was odd. My boys weren't stressed one bit. They knew they were going to win their matches, but I couldn't stop eating every bit of food that we had in our cooler. I said, I think I'm like stress eating or something. You know, I just couldn't stop. And it's funny. You look at Jonathan, and you look at Saul, and you see they've got a very different stress response. I mean, there's the king who's sitting underneath a pomegranate tree with 600 mighty warriors around him. And oh, by the way, he's got a sword. And there's Jonathan, and Jonathan's got a very different way of dealing with the stress. He takes action. And everything about his actions are so uncertain. I mean, the terrain is uncertain. He's got to climb up this cliff. Everyone knows in military, you have the advantage if you have the high ground. If you ever played paintball, you have the advantage if you're up above, you can shoot your opponents. And that's the problem that he has here is he doesn't have the high ground, uncertain terrain. And then everything about his tactics are so uncertain. I mean, did you see that in the text? I mean, he says in verse 6, he says, perhaps the Lord will give them into our hands. I mean, I don't know about you, but if I'm going to battle with Jonathan, I'm like, I want certainty, not perhaps the Lord will deliver them. I mean, his whole strategy, I'm no military genius, but he's basically going and picking a fight with the land of the giants. And he doesn't even know how outnumbered he is. He knows he's got two, him and his armor bearer, and there turns out to be 20 guys that he's coming up against. I mean, this isn't a strategy, right? I mean, come on, let's go show ourselves to the enemy. I mean, there's not even an element of surprise in Jonathan's tactics. I mean, this isn't strategy, this is a death sentence. And yet there's something about Jonathan in this moment that I think we can learn from. Because I think we approach life so calculated. We want these peaks in life, we want to deal with uncertainty, and we want to be so calculated. And yet, I think what we can learn from Jonathan is that life is not lived that way. Life is actually lived in defining the moments that God gives you. Yeah, I think there's a real problem with the way we approach life. In fact, we approach life not by the moments we're given, but by the minutes that we have, right? I mean, we don't really count life in minutes. Someone doesn't go around saying, well, hey, I'm 40,680 minutes, right? You know, they don't count that way, but we count in time, right? We count in months and years especially. I just turned 50 this last year, and so that was an eye-opener to counting time and maybe then realizing on the other side of that, you know, how much time I have left. And I think that's the problem. I think the greatest regret is that you or I would go through life and would be so focused on the minutes that we would miss the moments that we've been given. I don't know about you, but I read this story, and I want to live like Jonathan. How about you? I mean, I want to live where Jonathan sees a moment and says, I'm not going to let this moment pass me by. I'm going to step into this moment. I love this verse 12. This should be like everyone's life verse. He says, climb up after me. The Lord has given them into our hands. How does he know? Isn't that strange when you read that? I mean, like, how does he know he's going to win this battle? I don't think he really does. But he knows that he needs to face this challenge, this mountaintop. He must face this enemy, and he's not going to leave this moment without embracing the battle. You know, I don't know about you, but I've had a lot of battles in my life. I mean, I've battled for things that I thought was right. I've battled for ideas. I've battled for my way. Before I was a pastor, I can remember battling for job promotions and recognition and all those things in life. And I've won some battles. I've lost a lot of battles. But I do know this. I can kind of relate to Jonathan when I know that there's a battle I'm supposed to enter into, and I know I'm not going to lose. No matter what the outcome is, it's not going to be a loss, no matter how I might think of it. There are just some things that you just know. You just have a sense that I was made for this moment. I was looking through some journals, and I kind of like looking through really, really old journals, going back 8, 9, 10 years, and I do this kind of every year. I'll look through some things that maybe I feel like God has said or spoken to me or some verses, and I'm kind of always just asking God, you know, hey, what do you want for my life, and what's my calling really to look like in these next seasons? And I was doing some of that, and I came across a really, really old note that I had taken, and it had to do with this building. It had to do with actually a phone conversation I had with our attorney at the time, and we had an environmental attorney that was helping us get into this building, and before we could even consider being in this building, we had to do a lot of environmental cleanup, and the conversation was about a grant that we had submitted a proposal for, and turns out we won the grant, and the state of Michigan, the great state of Michigan that you live in right now, awarded us $230,000. That's about 10 years ago. That was a lot of money back then. That's still a lot of money now, if you ask me, right? That's a lot of money. And I'll never forget just getting that news. And I got the news from the attorney, and so I called our contact at the state, and her name was Susan, and she was so sweet. And she's like, yep, you'll get the $230,000, and it'll get wired to this account. They had all our account numbers already. We already gave them all that. And you'll get it next Friday. And then Friday came, and I remember, like, checking with people, like, hey, has anything showed up in our account yet? And nothing. So I called our friend at the state, Susan, and I said, hey, how about that gift? And she said, oh, my my boss found out, and he decided to reject your grant proposal. And it was all because he found out that we were a church. And I thought that was so funny because we had right on our application, Bridgeway, community, church. You know, it's like we weren't trying to hide the fact that we were a church, but she goes on to tell me that the state couldn't show partiality to a religious organization because then you have to show that then to everybody. And click, goodbye, nice knowing you. You know, that was kind of the end of the conversation. I just remember in that moment feeling kind of the sense of defeat, but also the sense of like, God is still going to do something for his great name here in this place. And we're now standing, we're now sitting in that building. And God found a way. It was certainly a much harder route by kind of human standards, but you're all testimony to the fundraising and the ways in which God found a way to get us into this building. And I'm not sharing that story this morning with you as some sort of like life coach or some sort of like spiritual pep talk, but I do want to say as clearly as I can that if God has shown you a moment, if God has given you a moment to step into, that you need to step into it. I hear so often people say, well, you know, I'll get involved in that when I have more time. You know, I'll make that change. I'll get involved in that ministry. I'll start that up when the kids are older and I have more time. And I've gotten to the point in my life where I actually have more time in my life. I've come to realize that. And my word to you today would be, you may get to a point in your life where you have more time, and you may even have certainly more resources, but you may never have those moments to step into that God has orchestrated for you. I had a friend that would call me. It seems like every few months he would call me up and say, hey, Ron, should I take this job? And he'd tell me all the reasons why he, pros and cons, should or shouldn't take the job. And then he wouldn't take the job. And then a few months would go by, and I'd get a call again. Hey, I got this other job opportunity. Should I take this job? And here's the reasons why or why not. And then the next time, the person called me up and said, I got another job opportunity. I remember just saying, like, kind of frustrated, like, I don't think God cares what you do. Like, I don't think God cares whether you take the job or don't take the job. What God cares is that you would step into the moments he's given you. And that you would define those moments with your life. That friend never called me for career advice ever again, you know? We've got these moments that God's given us. And what I love about this is Jonathan isn't afraid to step in. He steps into the moment. And, oh, by the way, he doesn't even do this alone. He brings along with him this armor bearer. Think about how strange that is in this story. Do you know what an armor bearer is? Armor bearer is the person that goes behind you, the great warrior, and carries all your swords. Carries like your extra sword and your dagger and another dagger. And what is this armor bearer in the story? He's unemployed, right? I mean, he's got nothing to do. There's literally two swords, and Jonathan is holding one of them. I mean, this person couldn't be more lost in the story than anyone. And yet, he has this commitment to this person. I think this shows us something about the people around us and the responsibility that we have to lead the people around us that are doing life together. In fact, I would just simply say it this way, that in life, in dealing with uncertainty, you need to choose your armor bearer. You need to choose the people that will go through life and go into the battle of life with you. The things that you are called to, the things that you're struggling with, you're not called to do those alone. In fact, this would be the idea of influence. And we all have influence. We all have people in our lives that are there for a reason, and you may think that, well, I can just kind of brush them aside. Maybe it's a friend or a neighbor or someone you share an office with, and actually God has placed them right next to you so that you could have influence on their life, that you could actually bring them along in the journeys and adventures, and that you, for other people, could be their armor bearer too. We're talking about influence. It kind of got me thinking because I was sick for a while. It got me thinking about influence, which, you know, there's another word real similar to that called influenza, right? And we all get how the flu spreads, how contagion takes place, right? And, you know, whether it be airborne or surface-borne. And I was thinking about how influenza spreads. But so should our influence. I mean, our influence, we've got this opportunity with, you know, disease transmits, but so does hope. So does love, so does mercy, and we have the opportunity to share that with others. You know, Pastor Mike has been doing a great job of encouraging you and giving you opportunities to sign up for small groups and to do life together. We really believe that, and we know that we can only go so far. At some point, you're going to have to decide to choose the people that you're going to do life with, and And we just hope that you've done that, because we just know how valuable that will be when it comes to the uncertainty and the battles of life. I want to challenge you to choose the people around you. It can be kind of scary, right, to choose someone as an armor bearer. It kind of means that they're behind you, and I don't know, maybe you've felt that before, like, hey, I've chosen people to be around me, and they've stabbed me in the back. And maybe for you this morning, it's overcoming kind of that hurdle of, like, trusting again and trusting people to do life with. I'll just tell you that the spiritual life was never intended to be lived alone. Last thought, and it really has to do with this verse 13. I wanted to read this, and I want to put this back on the screen so you can kind of get an image of this in your mind. I love how this scene ends. It says, Jonathan climbed up using his hands and his feet with his armor bearer right behind him. I want you to leave here today really cementing that vision in your head. There's so much detail in this story about these cliffs, and they're named, right? I mean, Bozez and Sena, one's facing north, one facing south. And then the very end of the story, the writer makes sure that you don't miss that all those details aren't random. In all my life of studying the Bible, I've learned that God doesn't waste words. He doesn't put things in there for no reason. But I read this and I thought, how strange, right? Jonathan climbed up using his hands and feet. Like, duh, right? I mean, how redundant is that? If you're going to climb up a cliff, you're going to climb a mountain, you would have to use your hands and your feet. And then it dawned on me, I think the writer wants us to know that there's something about this journey, there's something about this peak and the uncertainty that Jonathan had to face that meant he had to be all in. He had to use all strength and all the energy that he'd been given. In fact, I would just simply say that when we're faced with uncertainty, that we're going to have to dig in with all that we've got. That with everything we have, we've got to dig in to life. And we've got to use all the resources and all the energy that we have. There's one author I really like. His name is John Eldridge. He's written a whole bunch of books. You might have heard of him, Wild at Heart, and a whole bunch of other books for women as well. But he's got this idea where he says kind of like, half-hearted just won't cut it anymore. And I got thinking about that in my own spiritual life, just about how being half-hearted just won't cut it. We got to be all in, whether that be in our spiritual lives or in our relationships or in the areas that God has called us. God has called us to be all in with everything we've got. I want to challenge you this morning as the worship team comes up to just maybe make a note this morning. And I want to ask you, what is it that God has called you to dig into? What has he called you to dig into with all that you've got? Maybe it's a project. Maybe it's a career change. Maybe it's something relationally or in your parenting. Maybe it's in your marriage. And God said, you know, you need to dig in and you need to figure that out. Maybe it's something in your faith journey. God wants this year or this season to be a season of prayer and Bible study, and he's called you to step into that. Maybe God has placed some people around you, and he's called you to step into forgiveness and conflict resolution. And wherever that is, whatever that is, God will give you the strength to do that, but you must dig in. I want to just pray for you this moment, so if you would bow your head and if you would close your eyes, let's just turn to the Lord. God, as we start this journey, as we start this series, I want to thank you. I want to thank you in advance for the peaks, which are great in life, and the valleys, which don't seem very good when we go through them. But all of these moments are moments that you've created to shape our lives. Our life is a vapor, it's a mist, and our light and momentary troubles are all opportunities to trust you deeper and to follow you more closely. God, I pray in this community as we start this series that we would just be honest and that we would allow you to go into the depths of our hearts where you truly need to work. That, God, we would not be filled with fear or even just frenzied activity or amusement, but that we would be filled with faith. Faith in a firm foundation in Jesus Christ. God, I want to pray for just anyone within the sound of my voice, no matter what they've carried in today, that they brought here before you, Lord, that you see them, that you know them, and that in this moment, God, you want them to know that they are deeply, deeply loved, that they are valued, and that you're just crazy in love with every single person here today, God. God, may our response be one of worship and love back to you. It's in your name we pray. Amen.
Thanks for listening to our podcast today. Check out our app or website at bridgewaycommunity.org for more messages or to take the sermon one step deeper by downloading the sermon discussion guide.